initial, and it's still one of our goals, is to work with those who are marginalized and just to let them tell us what it is they need. And out of this grew our focus, current focus on homeless services. We just began by asking people in the lot next door, people would need, what is it you need? And they began to share with us. And so,
what did they say?
Oh, it was different things. It was, you know, one person, one man was homeless. We started by, you know, doing the usual, giving food and clothing and that kind of thing. And then one man had some medical issues, and he needed some treatment on Oahu, but he couldn't manage the flight over there by himself or navigate to the hospital and whatever kinds of treatment he needed. And so he suggested to his healthcare provider, maybe someone at Family Life Center can help me. And so we said, you know, okay. So I sent someone over with him, you know, the medical paid for his flight, but helped him to navigate the doctor's appointments, the taxi, how to get on and off the plane. All those things are really daunting to someone who's just not used to it. And so over the course of years, we've just responded to what people needed.
What people? How do you find them?
You know, amazing people just come to our door. They call us. Family Life Center was originally started by our church, which is now known as King's Cathedral. And as the church got larger, people would see the large church and say, they must be able to help me. And they weren't necessarily members of the congregation. And so my background is I have a bachelor's in social services, and I also have an MBA. And so I was assigned to do this full time. And by the way, you figure out what it is people need and find the money to do it. We'll provide the spaces provided by the church, King's Cathedral. So
when was this?
This was, almost 20 years ago. I was working for the church at the time. And so this became my full-time job. But Family Life Center is a separate 501c3. It's a separate organization. We are still connected to the church, but it is a separate. We have all our own financing and, you know, board and everything. So
I love your mission, and I love the way you started it by asking questions.
Yes. Yes. We didn't want to do what we thought, because we have our own ideas. We look at what people are going through and we think, oh, they need this and they need that. And so a lot of it came through phone calls. Can you help me with this? Can you help me with this? And so we look and see, does this fit in what we want to do? And if it does, let's see if there's a way we can do it. So we had no funding to begin with, except for what the church provided. They paid my salary. And it was limiting in the sense that there wasn't a whole lot of money, but also freeing in the sense that you could pretty much do what you felt like people needed. Yeah. I think homelessness began around in the 80s when, initially, large cities, when mental health services people were deinstitutionalized and said, you know, they can function better in the community with support services, which is true, but the support services was not there. And so right outside of the mental institutions, you would see a lot of people who had been discharged. And I think that was the beginning of it. And in a way, I think it took a little longer. I remember growing up, everybody I knew, we all had the crazy uncle or auntie that lived with us. But they, you know, somebody made a room for them, and they raked leaves all day long, and somebody made sure that they showered and they ate, and it was fine. But as we've, you know, grown our social networks have kind of dissolved, and people don't have that that family support anymore, I think in Hawaii, then it's become more visible. So a lot, almost all of the people that we work with have either burned all their bridges with their families or do not have any family connections any longer, or have moved here, and so they don't have that support system. And it used to be, I think, that a lot of the homeless were careful to stay in areas where they were not seen, so you couldn't tell that they were there. It's only, I've seen it only in the last maybe 5 years on Maui that people are more visible now. So the population hasn't grown. Our numbers don't show that it's grown. In fact, in the last 2 years, it's gone down. I think largely to our efforts to move people off the streets into permanent housing, not temporary solutions, but into permanent housing. It's starting to drop. It's just that they're more visible because of where they're choosing to put their camp. You know, the Housing First concept has been around since 1992 or something like that. Yeah. But of course, it took a while to see whether it was actually going to produce results or not. And it has. It's a proven solution. It's the only solution that permanently ends homelessness, because you're in permanent housing and camp, you know, tent cities, all that kind of Ohana zones. Those are temporary solutions that move people from a particular area, but they're still homeless. Now you're managing homelessness. You're not ending homelessness. You're managing it. And so I am not a proponent of that. I would just say that up front. I am into ending homelessness. So once we, as a service provider, decided that, yes, okay, we'll believe these studies and we will try it out, even though we had our misgivings, we got one program that where we could house, I think it was 12 people. And so we started with that and we began to house people. And then, you know, you have to make regular follow-up visits. And we found that it was successful. Maybe one or two were not successful, but primarily because they would not access the services, would not access mental health services, or substance services, or any kind of just cleaning house. And to where the landlord would say, you know, sorry, you can't live here anymore. But this was scattered site out in the community. We didn't have any special housing just for them. And so in the last year or two, we really stepped up our efforts. And so we have found landlords that are willing to work with us, even as they're, purchasing apartments. We'll tell them, you know, what we really need is more studios or one bedrooms. Could you configure this in a way that instead of housing one large family, maybe we can house two individuals, you know, separate it, make sure you have a bathroom and cooking. And so that is working. Of course, we have to, when they call, we have to be available.
How did you ever get that kind of relationship?
We just started working with one landlord, and it worked well with one person. And if we pay the rent, if it's a subsidized, if it's permanent supportive housing, we will pay the rent. The person pays up to 30% of their income. We have them pay us their share so that the landlord doesn't have to change it. chase it. So they like that. They like that the payment comes on time. They don't have to chase after the tenant. And they also like the fact that if there's an issue, they can call us. Because if they're renting to the general public and they have an issue, they have nobody to call. They just have to deal with it, you know. So...
And they rent at what level? I mean, they rent at regular market rate?
Market rate.
On Maui? Well,
market rate. And so, of course, we have to go by the fair market rent, you know, that HUD has. And we'll negotiate with them. And then if there are damages, we'll find somebody to fix it. Our strategy has been we will find the person to fix it. You give us back the deposit, but we'll find a person to fix it, to clean it, to haul out all the junk. The last one of the places, we made 10 trips to the dump. Because the person just abandoned it and went to the Philippines or something. You have to do all those kinds of things, and you have to work closely with the landlord. Our biggest problem is finding the housing.
So are there tons of people waiting to find, that are just on the streets just waiting to find a house, like Honolulu, or what?
Oh, no, we're not as bad as Oahu. Every time I go over there, I'm just, oh my goodness, I'm glad I don't have this issue. No. You know, we have emergency shelter, transitional shelter.
So almost everybody who wants to have a roof can have one?
Well, not necessarily, because they're still waiting. We just have a small emergency shelter. We can take up to 18. Mm-hmm. We're not always full. We try to move people out. I think our current experience is within 47 days we can get a person out into permanent housing. And our rate has been like 69% of the people get into permanent housing. The rest is not necessarily that they go back to homelessness, but some have gone to jail, some have moved, different reasons. But we have a pretty high rate of success for people that come into our shelter. There is a large population out there that cannot handle shelter. And
what percent do you think that would be?
I would say our last point in time, we haven't gotten our official statistics this year, but it's around between 400 and 500.
On Maui?
On Maui, yeah. At any point in time.
That don't want to.
Oh, no. That we counted that are outside. Yeah, unsheltered.
Total unsheltered.
Yeah.
Do you find the point in time counts are pretty accurate?
I'll have to say yes, because I'm in charge of it. And I have, and so this year, what we did was we took our list of active people in our outreach, and we made sure we found all but four people, because we wanted to see, are these people that we're reporting in our HMIS database, are these people that we're reporting homeless? Is our information accurate, and are we keeping it up to date? And in fact, we did. And then there were another 200 or 300 that are not in our database. And that's I think the nature of fluid, you know, how people move from place to place, or people that are not necessarily in places that are visible. But on that day, they may have been, say, at a feeding site or some other place where we were able to track them. Or right now, our services are targeted to people who want help with permanent housing. If you say, I want permanent housing, but I don't want your help, then we will not have you as an active person. We'll come back. But we focus on the ones who do want housing.
Of the 500, unsheltered, what percent do you think will never really want to be sheltered?
That's difficult to say, and it's different in different areas. Now in Kihei, we found that probably 50% of the population was single white males between the ages of 25 and 55. A lot of transients in that area. In Lahaina, there's a lot of transients as well. I haven't really studied that area, but it depends on why people are here. I think that we don't see a large native population because people still have connections. They may be couch surfing, they may be sleeping in someone. So if someone's sleeping in a tent in someone's backyard, we would never know about it. But they're homeless. You know, we would never know about it unless they came in and told us. And then we go out and we verify.
Where are the homeless on Maui?
There you will see people on the streets. Generally, if they are on the streets,
Wailuku,
central area. There's people back here by the library. And generally, if they're visible to you, we have outreach to them. And they know who we are, and we keep coming back. And maybe they'll run and hide sometimes, but I've been at a lot of conferences and I heard a lot of nationwide speakers, and they all say the same thing. Every community says the same thing. We don't have enough housing. But yet, we are finding housing. So we still have to, I think we still have to build housing. And so Family Life Center, we bought these two apartments. And so our strategy is that they have to be debt-free, and we have to add to the current, we don't want to take something that's already being used for housing, but maybe some underutilized space, and that's what we look for. So that with the two apartment buildings, we were able to get money from the county as well as from Weinberg Foundation to renovate and improve the property. And then we can offer it at an affordable rate. So I think that there are a lot of underutilized properties around the community. We look for them all the time. So we have realtors calling us. They think we have money, but we don't have a dime. But we're always
that's
open.
How you did it.
Yes. Yeah. We found the place first. In one of the cases, we even had an architect draw plans. We don't even own the building. But should it become available, and if we can find the funding for it, and it has to be debt-free, because then you can charge an affordable rent and you can use it. We've used all the money to pay for someone to manage it and to pay for upgrades. You know, the buildings are old. We have to upgrade all the electrical, all the plumbing. So we keep using the money to do that. But I think that there are large developers, and I mean, honestly, we aren't gonna address the problem if we just do these small units. But I believe that each of us, even though we're small, we can make a dent in the need by, you know, going after these little projects. But we still need developers to do the big projects.
Developers? You mean to create affordable as a percentage of the whole? You know, we've been trying that on Oahu.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when I drive around Oahu, I see a lot of
Empty buildings.
Yeah. And so we won't build from scratch. It just takes too long. We renovated upstairs to do a shelter. It took us 7 years. So we will never take on a project where we build from scratch. Just the process you have to go through is just, I'll be so old by then. But we look for underutilized empty buildings can be really converted. And we've looked at some, we said, no, that's not going to work because of the way the building configured or the zoning. It's got to have apartment zoning. It's got to have the right zoning. Generally, I would say maybe 20% are those people that cycle in and out, in and out. But the other 80%, it's a one-time thing.
A first-time thing.
It's a first-time thing. And
what happened?
A lot of them, they couldn't afford their mortgages anymore. Loss of income, change in status, divorce, one spouse dying, losing a job, but generally it hasn't been a real big issue lately because they'll get another job. So maybe it's health issues. They can't work any longer, or they can't work at the job that they could, where they earned a good wage, a separation. There's a little bit of it where people move here and they had a plan of what they were going to do and then did not do their research well, didn't realize that it was so expensive and that the job at McDonald's isn't going to afford you the ability to rent a place.
Oh, remember that HTA money, or was it
Hawaii Tourism?
Hawaii Tourism money that came through to send people back?
Yes, we have some of that money.
You still have it?
Yes.
We use it
very sparingly. In fact, we just used it yesterday with a client who we've been trying to serve for probably 5 or 6 years. And educated person, but with some issues, so just never really could get a job and stick with it. And so we make sure that we find a connection where they're going to. We'll email, we'll call. Somebody has to receive you on the other side and say that they're going to, your homelessness is going to be ended.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, we don't just send people back. So we make contact with the families. Usually it's a family member, sometimes it's a friend, and they have to say they will provide a home, they have to give us an address, we will check it out. One time we checked it out and found out it was a shelter. Said, no, we're not paying for you to go. We're not paying for you to go somewhere else and be homeless there and, you know, have to draw on the system. Yeah, it has to be just some unfortunate circumstance that, and generally if family's willing to take you back, we know that, you know, they haven't burned all their bridges, that there is some hope.
Thank you so much.